I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Jessica Green. She is Associate Professor of Biology at the University of Oregon, and she's the Director of the Biology and Built Environment Center there. She's External Faculty at the Santa Fe Institute here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So you study microbes in the air, the things that we breathe, the living organisms that we breathe. And it turns out that when we go outside and when we go inside, they're vastly different ecosystems in terms of the air that we breathe.
So in terms of the air that we breathe, we're just beginning to understand the differences between the outdoors and the indoors. But from our preliminary data, it does suggest that there's a unique ecosystem that is indoors, and the microbes that we breathe indoors is significantly different from the microbes that we breathe outdoors, and also that the way we design and operate the buildings that we live, play, and work in has an impact on the types of microbes that we breathe indoors.
Now, when we talk about indoors, the difference is particularly marked in buildings that have heating, ventilation, air conditioning systems, giant filters, buildings where the windows don't open and where basically they're almost sealed environments with circulating air and there's not too much exchange with the outside.
That's correct. So for the first study that we conducted, which was in a hospital in Portland, Oregon, it was a very typical healthcare facility environment where the rooms are treated and the air is treated using mechanical ventilation systems because it's believed that this is in the best interest of patients and their health. But as you know, many of the spaces that we inhabit have mechanical ventilation systems. And if you think about the history of this, I think it was around the 1950s when the air conditioner was invented. And during this time, this is when you saw a transition from buildings that were thin and skinny. And these types of buildings were naturally ventilated and also were had a lot of natural light in them.
So the breeze just blew through them, essentially.
Yes. Yeah, and architects had the skill set during that time, many of them, to heat and cool spaces using natural light and natural ventilation. But we've moved into an era now where many architects are not trained to use these tricks of natural light and natural ventilation, and buildings have become fatter. So when you think about the spaces where we are breathing in treated air, they're commonly very large, vacuous buildings, and they very commonly have artificial light.
So when you study the contents of the air, first of all, how do you do that? This is, I guess, a pretty new field.
It is a new field in the context of looking at microbes and looking at the DNA of microbes. But people have been looking at the types of microbes in air using culture-based techniques for a long time. In order to really differentiate the evolutionary history of the microbes that we sample and the evolutionary relatedness of those microbes and to try to identify what they are, we need to look at the DNA of those microbes so we can compare their genes. And another reason this is important is because most of the microbes on Earth don't grow on agar plates, so you can't study them using culture-based techniques.
Uh-huh.
And in order to look at the DNA of microbes, there's a couple of ways that you can do that. One way is by filtering them. So you have a vacuum pump, and you suck air over a filter, and then you take the DNA off of that filter. And another way to look at microbes in the air is to use a liquid impinger, which is a glorified bong. Again, you use a vacuum pump, and you're sucking the microbes into the air in the liquid, and then you can pour those over a filter and study the DNA of the microbes in the air.
So when you began to study, for example, in the hospital in Oregon that you studied, what did you find in the air?
Well, we focused that study on bacteria, and because there's such a small amount of biomass in air relative to dirt or water, we used a process where you make many, many copies of the DNA that genes that you pull out of the air. And that process is called amplification. And so the reason that we did that was because of a low biomass, and what we focused on were just bacteria. So we weren't looking at fungi, and we also weren't looking at archaea or viruses.
And so among the bacteria, what did you find?
We found that indoors, there were many types of bacteria that are commonly associated with human skin and with human spit, what you would see, what's been sequenced before in the mouth. And we found that from the outdoor samples that we took, where we had these liquid impingers on the rooftop of the hospital, we found that the most abundant and common microbes in those samples were those that are commonly found in dirt and on leaves and in water.
So I know it's probably too early to draw really definitive conclusions about this, but tentatively, what does that say about the health of the air indoors and outdoors for human beings?
Well, a part of what we discovered was that of the bacteria that we found, we looked at what proportion of those bacteria were potentially pathogenic, meaning that their sequences were very closely related to the sequences of known human pathogens.
And which in hospitals wouldn't be surprising, I suppose.
Right.
If you were sick with something, you breathe out, that airborne pathogen goes into the air, and then you guys study it.
Yes, and just because we found these potential pathogens in the air doesn't necessarily mean that it would make somebody sick, because there's an interaction between the bacteria and a human's immune system. But if a human's immune system is compromised, then there's a higher probability of getting really sick from one of these potential pathogens.
So in hospitals, in big office buildings and so on, is the air filtered or is it merely cooled and heated?
It's both. So most healthcare facilities in the developed world have HVAC systems which include both filtering the air a number of times and also treating it so that it's in what's called a human's thermal comfort zone. And so there's a range of temperature and relative humidity that most indoor spaces are designed to be in for systems like this where we're treating the air. And that's the big difference between spaces that are designed using mechanical ventilation versus natural ventilation.
So it does bring up the big question, is hospital air healthy?
And I think to really answer that question, we would need to partner information about microbial genomics or information about the DNA of microbes that we sample from hospitals with clinical data. So what we can do with the data that we have now is develop hypotheses about what might make a healthier environment. But to really understand what's healthier versus not, we would want information such as how many sick days do office workers call in this building space? How long are patients in a healthcare facility, how long do they stay after their treatment? Or how commonly do they acquire infections?
Yeah, how long do they stay is determined by the insurance companies.
I guess that's a good point.
But what infections they get, I mean, there's probably nobody listening to this show who doesn't have some story of someone they know who's gotten an infection in a hospital. I've got a close friend who died of such a thing.
Yes, and that's very common. And from some of the preliminary questioning that I did with people who work in infection control with hospitals, stated and asked that their hospital not be identified, that if there's a large group of healthcare facilities associated with one organization, that each hospital has its own unique strains or types of infections that are associated with that hospital.
Very interesting. We're talking to Professor of Biology Jessica Green about microbial biodiversity and sustainable well-being. That's the name of the talk that she's giving tonight. What happens when air is filtered in these HVAC systems? What happens to the dirty filters?
Well, there are very strict standards and codes on how frequently those filters need to be changed. Something that I didn't say before is one thing these filters we discovered do a very good job at is filtering pollen from outside. But to answer your question, these filters need to be, the whole HVAC system needs to be very carefully maintained on a regular basis. And one of the reasons I find this interesting is that I have been told that in the developing world, there are a lot of communities that are investing their resources in modeling hospitals in a similar way to the hospitals that are designed in the United States. Yet they oftentimes can't afford the energy bill to run that system or to keep up the maintenance on that system. And so think of the ramifications of a healthcare facility that has been designed to not have natural ventilation and then to not be able to even run the mechanical ventilation system.
So they'd be better off designing hospitals that had courtyards and windows on each side or other ways of ventilating.
Yes, and another interesting thing that I've learned is that in several European countries, hospitals are being designed using natural ventilation and natural light. And a lot of thinking behind this is not necessarily related to the types of microbes that are in those buildings, but about data that's been collected about the healing process and the well-being of people that are going through treatment and how does it affect people to be exposed to windows versus being in very artificial environment.
And there's the visual component of that, which is just simply being able to look out the window has a healing effect and look at maybe mountains or a tree with a bird in it or something like that. But then there's this other component, which is maybe the air is healthier if you get to open the window.
Yes, and so what we're interested in at the center is putting some quantitative data behind that where we can really say, well, under these different design scenarios, these are the types of microbes that you might expect to have indoors.
Now, in your view, would it be healthy to have completely microbe-free air if you had like the best filters in the world and there was just nothing in the air except for humidity? Would that be a good thing?
Well, I don't think that would be possible, and I also don't think that would be a good thing at all, because most of the microbes are really important, not only for the functioning of our own bodies, but for the functioning of buildings as ecosystems. So microbes surely play a significant role in keeping the air clean through metabolic processes.
Is that right?
Yeah. So if you think about any ecosystem, the real working horse and the unseen working horse of an ecosystem that's keeping it functioning properly are the microbes.
In the soil or?
Everywhere. In the soil, in water, and I also believe in air.
Very interesting. So you've been studying bacteria, but as you've mentioned, there are all sorts of other things in the air. There's fungi, viruses, pollens, dirt, everything else. Do you try to understand all those things and their interaction together as an ecosystem?
I think it's really important to do that, and that's the direction that we're heading. And so we've started at the very simple step of, which turns out to not be very simple. We've been working in this area for a number of years, but I think it's very important to understand, just like you said, all of the microbes and how they interact with one another in the microbial ecosystem. And microbes are also interacting with plants and animals that are indoors. So there's going to be interactions among people and the microbes that are indoors and plants and pets and other organisms.
Do you study the relationship between these environments and allergies?
That's not something that we're doing right now, but again, I think that that would be very key to linking the kind of data that we're collecting to human health. So not only understanding rates of infection and how those are correlated with the diversity of microbes indoors, but again, you know, the any type of health issue or health benefits that somebody might have.
It's so interesting to me that people who grow up in, at least my understanding is the people who grow up like on farms and places where they're digging around in the dirt and are exposed to a lot of plant matter and animal matter tend not to get allergies so much. And people who live in more kind of sterile indoor environments are more likely to get allergies. But then once you have allergies, being in an air-conditioned space is really good for you because you're not exposed to all those pollens.
And I saw an interesting talk by at the Ecological Society of America a couple of years ago. I think this work has been published now, suggesting that the types of microbes that babies are exposed to, even during birth, whether they have a C-section or a vaginal birth, is correlated with the risk of getting asthma or peanut allergies and things like that.
That's amazing.
Yes, and so there are investigators now that are looking at, in healthcare facilities, how the microbes in those healthcare facilities colonize babies right when they're born, and there may be longer-term studies to look at how that affects the health of these people.
It would be interesting to do comparative clinical studies where you're looking at the health outcomes. I mean, there's so many variables, but the health outcomes of people who are in naturally ventilated hospitals versus artificially ventilated hospitals.
It would be. And it would also be very useful to understand how these patterns might vary depending on where you live in the world. So we've studied one hospital in Portland, Oregon, but the results that we find may be very different if you're looking at a healthcare facility in the tropics or if you're looking at a healthcare facility in one of the Nordic regions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's also, when you are talking about this, I think of the all the studies of ecosystem ecology, ecosystem biology, where you have a functioning, healthy ecosystem, and then you start to take out one species, then another, and another. We talked about wolves recently, and at a certain point, the whole thing breaks down. Mm-hmm. But we don't think of that, I mean, until now, I have never thought of that in terms of more urban ecosystems.
So I think that there's currently a real great surge in urban ecology and evolution. I saw a post. There's been a couple of posts in the New York Times this summer, one by Carl Zimmer, thinking about the evolution of plants and animals in urban spaces. And I see this work on the built environment really exploding to not just look at rooms within buildings or individual buildings, but in suites of buildings or entire cities. And it would be interesting to know how have microbes evolved in urban spaces versus rural spaces or even more remote spaces?
Well, we hope you come back in a couple of years and give us an update.
Okay.
Jessica Green is Associate Professor of Biology at the University of Oregon and Director of the Biology and Built Environment Center. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.